Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the 10 Laws Podcast with East Forest. I'm East. How you doing? Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening and subscribing. And for everyone who's given the podcast a review. We appreciate it. This week, I have a conversation with Ronan Levy. He is one of the co-founders of Field Trip Health. And Field Trip is a website, and there's also an app that you can use the app for preparation, integration for journeys of any kind, particularly psychedelic journeys. And they also have an app in the app, like you can play music and record thoughts and ideas during a trip. And then they also have brick and mortar centers where you can see therapists to do things like ketamine therapy. And I'd imagine in the future, as more things come online, things like psilocybin therapy and so forth. So I was really grateful to talk to Ronan because they're doing a lot of really cool and interesting things. And I really appreciated the opportunity myself just to ask more questions and learn about what's up. I'm excited to be releasing a new track off the Possible album. This will be the third release on Wednesday. And that will be the song Undying. I'll give you a little sample of it here at the end of the podcast, but it's really cool. I'm really proud of this song. It might be my favorite off the whole album. It's got a string section and just this really spacious, minimalist piano, and the strings do all sorts of beautiful experimental layering. It's really three different string sections layered on top of one another. Lorna Doone helped with the string arrangements. I think it's really, really, really cool. So that comes out on Wednesday, wherever you listen to music. And we're also going to have some new women's tanks and these really beautiful fitted sweatshirts coming out soon. So either get on our mailing list at eastforest.org or check out socials. We'll let you know when those go live if you want to grab one before they're gone. Thank you to everybody on the East Forest Council on Patreon. If you want to support this podcast or just dive deeper into the ecosystem and world of our community, check it out. It's at patreon.com/eastforest. We do extras from the podcast, exclusive music, a monthly Zoom council. I share things over there whenever I can, and I love being in conversation in that method, and I really appreciate the support from everybody, so give it a look. You can also check it out at eastforest.org. Just scroll down and you'll see all about it. Thanks again for listening and for reviewing the podcast if you can. And thanks for saying hi. You can always do that at team@eastforest.org or just on the socials at East Forest on Instagram and at East Forest Music on the others. All right, let's get into this conversation with our new friend, Ronan Levy. Ronan Levy, thank you. Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's great to chat.
Yeah, like, so you're a part of Field Trip. I believe you're one of the founders, and this has been coming across my radar, and I think, like, the radar is pretty hot and fast over the months. And so it's good to just dive into, like, what it is you guys are up to, and I'm sure that's going to take us on lots of tangential conversations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. All right. Do you want me to dive into it?
Sure. You don't have to give us your like Field Trip pitch, so to speak, or because I'm sure you do this all the time. It's more just like a starting point of who you are and maybe how you got to this point, and there'll be lots of places to go from there.
Yeah, for sure. So how we got here? I mean, my personal path and the path of Field Trip are closely aligned, but they're not exactly the same. So with Field Trip was born out of our experience in the medical cannabis industry in Canada. We got into that industry. It's myself, Joseph Del Moral, Hanan Flyman, and Dr. Ryan Urmas. All of us worked in the same business. We started a company called Canadian Cannabis Clinics and a sister company called Canvas RX, which was part of the Canadian medical cannabis industry. We all got in being kind of agnostic towards cannabis, you know, open-minded, pretty liberal, but not necessarily cannabis advocates, and certainly skeptical at best as to the therapeutic applications of cannabis, but philosophically and politically totally on board with access to cannabis being the just and right thing to do. And so we started Canadian Cannabis Clinics, which grew to become the largest network of cannabis specialized medical clinics in Canada. We helped 150,000 Canadians access the legal medical cannabis system. And it really opened our eyes, you know, really changed our perspective around plant medicine and the potential of it and these once stigmatized medicines and how deeply meaningful and impactful they can be. And truthfully, we did very well through the sale of that business. We sold it to a company called Aurora Cannabis and helped Aurora, who at the time was recently licensed as a producer in Canada, we helped it grow into one of the largest cannabis producers globally. So it was a really, really fun time. It was a really meaningful time, and it was a really impactful time. And we spent a couple of years with Aurora helping that grow. And then we left in kind of mid-2018. And one of the first conversations we had was with someone who was doing something with psychedelics, really from a drug development perspective. And that was the first I'd really heard about psychedelics happening. I could vaguely recall something about Peter Thiel and Compass Pathways and psilocybin and all that kind of stuff, but I had no idea. And Judy Bloomstock is the name of the person we met with. She kind of pointed us out to Michael Pollan, had just published How to Change Your Mind. MAPS, I think 6 months beforehand, had been granted breakthrough therapy designation. And most importantly, I think for me, from the cultural zeitgeist perspective, there were now 3 or 4 online stores openly selling mushrooms in Canada. And maybe that's a uniquely Canadian experience because our attitudes to the war on drugs, I think, are a little bit softer than what's been executed in the US.
Spores or mushrooms? Like they're selling dried mushrooms. Psychedelic mushrooms. That was not fully legal in Canada.
It's still not.
They just went for it.
And the remarkable thing is of all the stores, there are probably about 50 stores now openly selling mushrooms online in Canada.
What?
But
I had no idea. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's very ubiquitous. I mean, part of it probably is informed by how cannabis came about in Canada. And I can take you down that historical conversation if we're interested. But the most remarkable thing is one of the stores got shut down. I think it was called Mungus, as in mail order fungus. And the reason it got shut down is because it got a letter from Health Canada indicating that they were selling an unapproved medicine. Not that you're trafficking drugs or narcotics. A nice letter from Health Canada saying you're selling an unapproved medication. Would you please shut down? And they did. You know, they were very respectful and responsible, and they shut down. So that's a very Canadian way of doing things. But when Judy kind of told us what was happening, I had that same kind of electric feel I had when we first got into the cannabis industry. I was like, oh my God, there is something really cool happening here. I don't know how to articulate it, but I just kind of got that energy of like, wow, this is something I need to learn more about. This is something we need to get into. And so we spent a whole bunch of time trying to think about how we get into this industry coming from the business perspective. And about 6 or 8 months later, Field Trip was born and we had a semblance of a business model to try and do something. But truthfully, we were just figuring stuff out at the time because it was so opaque. The future didn't seem very clear, but it was clear that there was something was happening. There was going to be a path to legal access in some form or another. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to be a part of it. Now, my personal journey also helps inform it, which is I've been working with meditation and metaphysics and deep spiritual exploration for probably about 15 years now. So I was pretty open-minded to a lot of the things that I think psychedelics open people up to before I had actually even tried psychedelics. But I knew the impact that my work with meditation and metaphysics had had on my life and my personal growth journey and just how transformative it had been for me, that I really thought about psychedelics as, for me, it's not about the drugs. It's not about psychedelics themselves. It's about them being a springboard to something else, right? If psychedelics are the springboard that gets you into, you know, emotional processing, personal growth, self-awareness, then that's amazing. But it's not about the drugs. It's about where it gets you to. And so when Judy in that meeting said a single psilocybin assisted therapy session is like 10 years of therapy in an afternoon, I was like, oh my God, this has to happen. Even if that's a gross exaggeration, if this can enable that conversation on a very meaningful basis, if this can turn the conversation around mental and emotional health and wellness and spirituality from something that we do reactively, which is we seek, you know, spiritual guidance or therapy you know, when we're anxious, when we're depressed, when there's a breakup, when there's, you know, a death in the family, if we can change that conversation to something that we do proactively, like we go to the gym, we all know going to the gym is good for us. We don't all do it, but we know it's good for us. It makes us stronger and healthier and live longer and happier.
Yeah.
If psychedelics can be the pivot point that shifts the conversation around mental and emotional and spirituality health to something we do proactive, I couldn't imagine doing something more impactful for the world. And just kind of got the sense that this was going to be the opportunity to do so. And so Field Trip was born.
Yeah. And you guys have been going pretty big as opposed to like, well, let's start and see how we'll do a little this, a little that. It was sort of like, let's put a big stake out there in multiple cities and countries. And I think you're kind of leading with ketamine therapy, I assume, because that's accessible and you're able to do that. And I'm sure you have an eye on other psychedelic therapies in the future. So we could talk about like what kind of pushback you may or may not be experiencing. But in general, there is kind of a gold rush and a land grab going on in the psychedelic space, particularly in the last like 12 to 18 months. It just seems to be accelerating as far as there's like this interest in jumping on the momentum of it. And anytime that happens, there's going to be some ups and downs and some mistakes made. And that's, I'm sure you saw this very much so in the cannabis wave as well. And so what are some of the pitfalls you're seeing, mistakes others or yourselves have been making, or ways you maybe have been course correcting or seeing like that we're going to need to course correct in as we're moving forward here?
Yeah, so far, I mean, as Field Trip, I don't think we've hit too many mistakes or too many kind of landmines that we weren't anticipating. You know, but I also think as far as it goes, we're doing it very thoughtfully. You know, we're probably more capitalistic, for-profit, enterprise motivated than I think many people within the psychedelic community may feel comfortable with. But when you go to our roots and who we are as people, you know, we're motivated by the right intentions. And one of the things we're bringing is what we did in the cannabis industry is we came in as non-cannabis guys, and that pissed a lot of cannabis people off, to be quite honest.
Meaning non-smokers, or what does that mean? Non-cannabis, like
non-growers. I had tried cannabis a handful of times. I think Joseph had tried it zero times. Hanan maybe once or twice. Like really, really newbies when it came to cannabis. But that gave us a degree of credibility. You know, we weren't coming from some unsubstantiated advocacy perspective of like, oh, cannabis saved my life. We'd speak credibly to more people, and importantly, the medical community, to say like, this is real medicine. And whether you think the medical path to legal cannabis was the right place to start, that's where it was starting in terms of broader based access. So you need to appeal to the medical community to make this meaningful, to create real impact, to change the attitudes that ultimately have changed over the last 10 years or so. But you had to start by doing it in a kind of structured way that spoke to an audience that really wasn't receptive to it. And so as we came into the psychedelics industry or the psychedelic space, I'm always reticent to call it an industry. We wanted to bring that same lens, which was, in order for this to achieve the impact that we think it can have, the gating process is going to be the medical community. It's going to start medically. Whether we like it or not, whether you think that's a good thing or a terrible thing, doesn't really matter. That's where it's going to start. So how do you make that a possibility? How do we get psychedelics to the point where cannabis is, which is not everybody uses cannabis, not everybody likes cannabis, but the general perspective is that cannabis is okay and may actually be a good thing. How do we get psychedelics there? Because they're starting in some ways from a more difficult position. So how do we drive that conversation in a way that we'll get the medical community bought in, we'll get, you know, parents and around the dinner table bought in, we'll get politicians bought in, so we can actually have a real shot at providing these therapies to a lot of people in a way that is going to create real impact thoughtfully. Now, there's plenty of debate as to whether psychedelics should be purely medical or not. And truthfully, I'm one of the people who say, no, I think it should be probably controlled largely to some degree, but I don't think it needs to be restricted to medical. But that's a separate conversation of where it should be. The fact is, that's where it is. And so what we're trying to do is really build the foundation of something that can move forward in a way that's going to create more impact by changing minds and attitudes, especially amongst the most conservative parts of the population, namely the medical community.
Yeah, and I hear that moving through the medical model is the path you think it needs to move through to essentially become more widespread and accepted. And I can understand that thought process. What are your concerns about making it accessible and relevant to the wider portions of the population from a cost perspective, or when it's behind this wall of medicalization, which certainly in the U.S. is a big cost issue and breaks down on a lot of social lines and racial lines?
Yeah, it's a real challenge, and it's not a question I have a perfect answer to. You know, on the one hand, because you're involving doctors and therapists and time and space and all that kind of stuff, it naturally becomes expensive. You know, people like to get paid for their time, particularly professionals. And that's really where a lot of the cost base is. It's not in the drugs. You know, racemic ketamine is a few dollars per dose. I imagine MDMA at a cost basis is not that expensive. But if you look at like the MAPS protocol that involves 84 hours of therapist time around a single session, obviously it's going to be expensive. You know, there's not a whole lot you can do about that. Now, the alternative is a much more open model where there's a whole bunch of different practitioners and less qualification requirements. The truth is, maybe that's okay. I don't know enough as to how that actually plays out. I don't think any of us do, to be quite honest, about how really broad-based, accessible psychedelic access is going to create impacts in a positive or negative way. We just don't know. What I do know is that starting with a medical system is a good way to get people more comfortable with having a broader conversation about what broader access looks like, how far it should go. I don't have a really formed opinion. Should it be a free-for-all? Maybe. Should it be strictly medical? I don't think so. Where's that zone in the middle? I don't know. But we'll get there. I think we just kind of got to put one foot in front of the other. And while that may mean that in the interim, a lot of people will be excluded from access, that's unfortunate, but I think it's inevitable at the same time. And I think it's just part of the stepping stone to broader access and figuring out a way to make this accessible and affordable to a lot of people.
I mean, is there a way Field Trip on their own could create methods of access or financial support or even in a gift model on certain levels just within your own company?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I mean, we're in the process of launching group therapy, which is going to bring down the costs. You know, even though we've raised a lot of capital, we're not financially sustainable yet. So to offer too much in the way of gifting or broad access is not something that we'll be able to support for a long time. So we're trying to find the right balance between increasing access and affordability and gifting or offering pro bono services to some people and making a healthy, sustainable model at the same time. And it's going to be a constantly evolving conversation. Again, I don't have the answers around this. We're trying to figure it out as we go, and it's not easy. But again, we've got really wonderful people within the company, from the founders all the way through to the staff who are seeing the people we work with and providing these therapies. And it's top of mind for all of us, and it's a continuing dialogue. And I think we'll get to somewhere good. But right now it's really just conversation and not too much in the way, truthfully, of really opening it up yet, but it is coming.
I think the group idea could lower costs for sure. I mean, I think I mentioned to you, my partner does group ketamine therapy here in Boise, and around here, that was nobody doing anything like that. And it's the main advantage. It's sort of like the community acupuncture model, if you're familiar with that.
I'm not, actually.
It started in Portland, actually, but then it moved rapidly around the world. The idea was on a sliding scale, $15 to $35, and you're in recliners, and the acupuncturist treats many people at once.
Okay.
So the acupuncturist can actually do somewhat better financially than they did one patient at a time for about an hour. And the patients found they liked it too, because you could drop in. It was easier to make an appointment. It was cheaper. You couldn't do all, you know, you could do 80% of the acupuncture points still in the recliner with your clothes on, just rolling up your sleeves and legs and stuff.
Right.
And so it was just sort of this model of like, by making it into groups, it created access for more and actually more abundance for the businesses too. And so it really spread.
It's great. It's interesting, but like as a still practicing lawyer, even though I don't really practice anymore, one of the things that I found to be like one of the causes that resonates with me is like how laws and regulations have all of these perverse and unintended side effects, right? So specific to group therapy, on the one hand, if you ask people, is privacy law good? Should you have rights to privacy? Is you know, health law and all that kind of stuff that keeps your medical records incredibly secure and, you know, off limits, good? Most people would say, yeah, that's wonderful. But it creates a challenge if you're trying to do group therapy, because you're now dealing with personal health information in a group context. And it creates a whole bunch of, you know, legal and regulatory challenges that we have to navigate at the same time. And it wasn't an intended consequence, but it is a function of a, you know, a function of an issue here, which if someone overhears, you know, you in a therapy session talking about how your parents hit you, you may not want that getting out, but there's someone in the chair beside you hearing all about that. And it's like, ah, you know, awesome, group therapy, that's great, more access,
yeah,
you know, better affordability, potentially better margins, but new issues come up. And it's, again, it's not comments on good or bad. It's just like, these are the things that we're trying to navigate one step at a time.
Well, when you're going through, you know, threading the needle inside the Goliath of the medical system, whereas in the underground, we've been doing this for decades where we have group circles and journeys and we're sharing and everyone's going deep and it's like, no one's signing the HIPAA letter, or, you know, it's like, and I get it. And so you're trying to do it in a mainstream way that now you're up against this system that some people would argue is, at least in the States, is broken. And it's like, we're trying to make things work. And actually, you know, at its core, trying to transform a society and a civilization going through a kind of fundamental transition that is about collapse and systems that aren't working anymore. And that is the system you're trying to make it work in. So there's going to be an inherent friction.
Of course.
And I wouldn't want to be doing in your shoes, trying to figure that out. I hear that. It can be hard.
It totally. I get like, you know, it's funny because you have all of these colleges and boards that are designed to regulate professions, right? And one of the things they're supposed to do is hold people to certain standards, or the professions under, professionals under them to certain standards. But what sometimes that does, it means that the most qualified people for a given task can't do it because their bodies won't let them. So potentially, and I'm not suggesting that underground therapists are any less qualified, but it means that, you know, sometimes people may seek out less qualified people because they're not regulated for something that really requires probably the utmost like professionalism and discretion. And it's just one of those, again, funny, perverse things of like, you try and do good by creating standards, but what you end up doing is forcing people to find alternative paths that may not be as good. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm really trying not to suggest that underground therapy is not, but it does mean that, for instance, like our therapists who are amongst the most qualified can't do certain things anymore in this context because of concerns around the college. And I'm like, that just makes no sense. You're saving one group to sacrifice another.
And it does go both ways. You know, I could look at it and say, there's a lot of wealth of experience and knowledge in the underground that could be anecdotal or completely outside any systems or regulation that have yet to be fully brought into the mainstream. Not that we're even in any mainstream yet, but this is a good transition to talk about the way I see the role of ceremony and how I see music as part of that ceremony and being the central guide. And when you're in the experience itself, and you see this in indigenous ceremonies, almost all of them, the music, in essence, is the ceremony. It is almost like the sonic architecture of the space that you're in. And when you're not being guided by any kind of words or direction, the medicine and interaction with these harmonies and rhythms is what's walking you through it. And you look at something like the Acaros and an ayahuasca ceremony, they argue that that is the ceremony and it's calling forth the spirit of the medicine. Lakota sweat lodges, the songs are the prayers that take you through the gates of the sweat lodge. San Pedro goes on and on. And I've noticed that from my own experience 12 years ago, for myself, just being kicked into the space of trying to figure out how to lead psilocybin ceremonies and really not knowing anything and just trying to, A, pick up information on the internet about sound healing or books or esoteric information or going to indigenous ceremonies and just trying to learn experientially to what's the technology people developed for years, I quickly started to realize how powerful it is, music in this space. And so the question I have for you is, there's lots of amazing information that is starting to come out and more will come out about the chemical benefit. We could just look at ketamine, about how we're seeing, about how it helps treatment-resistant depression, anxiety, even chronic pain. And there seems to be something going on a neurobiological level. But there also, in conjunction with that, from my own experience and others, that benefit is intimately entwined with the psycho-spiritual, emotional, psychological element. And when those two are married together, that's when you get the real benefits of psychedelics. It's not just taking a pill. It's like you go through something spiritually and emotionally that creates the real genesis of change. So that role of ceremony and music, there's slightly different discussions here. How much are you guys recognizing the importance of that as the pillar of the experience itself?
Yeah, I mean, again, trying to position ourselves as a mainstream organization that appeals to the medical community, and I would say, you know, the broad mass of people who probably tend to be over rational, not terribly spiritual, you know, think that like Lakota sweat lodges are like, okay, to maybe really that's weird that people are doing it. We're trying to thread the needle and trying to find that balance, right? So we definitely lean into the psychedelic experience. We definitely lean into the therapy. You'll see aspects of ceremony start to be introduced into the practices, but really, truthfully, in a sanitized way. Because for a lot of people, if you go too far into it, they'll just put their hands up and say, this is not for me. This is too woo-woo, right? So we're trying to make it approachable. And my personal belief is that you can't help but be touched by psychedelics. So even if, you know, you go in the purely most sanitized, medical, non-ceremony experience, you're still going to be touched on some level in a spiritual way. And to me, that's still a wonderful outcome. And even if it's only a movement of an inch as opposed to a meter or a yard, that's okay. That's a start. You know, that's better than nothing. And it's going to be all of those kind of incremental movements across a lot of people that I think is going to create the big shift. I don't know if you're familiar. I think there's a book called like 10% Happier about how meditation just makes you 10% happier. And it's like, that's great. You know, if everybody was just 10% happier, or if everybody was just 1% more spiritual or more tapped into their emotions, or anything along those lines, you know, that's amazing. And it'd be better if it's 5 or 10% or 50%. But if 1% is what we need to strive for right now, because that's going to create the tipping point, great. And so, you know, again, we're trying to find a balance between being appealing to that rational, you know, very logic driven mind that most of modern Western society tends to reward in terms of employment and success and careers and all that kind of stuff, while still bringing in some of that spirituality. Because I agree with you, you know, I think it is the spiritual component of this combined with the neurochemistry that creates the experience. For example, there's one person who went through our treatment, I think in our New York center, and she said that she had never tried large dose psychedelics, but after experience, she found herself finding the profound in the mundane. And I was like, that's almost the perfect example of exactly what psychedelics do, right? Because if you can find meaning in everything, if everything is deeply, profoundly magical and wonderful, even the most things we dismiss as mundane on a daily basis, there's almost no space for depression. There's almost no space for anxiety or worry or all of those negative emotions or energies. They kind of get forced out. You know, I like to say that beauty is a transformative energy. When you experience beauty, most people can't stay in that energy for too long. It's too overwhelming, but it's transformative and you'll be touched forevermore by that experience of beauty. And so I think there's a lot of that going on. And again, if we could just do it on an incremental basis, because going too far too fast for a large majority of the population is going to be too much and potentially lead to a backlash, then that's A-okay with me.
I'm all about building bridges. I mean, the ethos of my own project with East Forest is in line with that thinking that I want to create experiences that can't be argued with. I mean, there isn't an out just because, you know, the word dolphin was said or vibrational resonance, you know, all the things people say that really are metaphors and now have, all words have different forms of baggage, you know, and it gives someone an out. Let's just call them new age tropes or whatever. And so sure. I'm always trying to find ways of talking about it and even musically, that the music itself isn't pushing them away with musical language that now has baggage, in a sense. That we know, we hear certain sounds that like might be, oh, that's such and such, that's not for me, you know, or that's new age this, or that's this or this. And but if you cloak it in a language, I found with music that creates a sense of invitation to the Western ear, that it's sort of like, well, there's a familiarity, but it's kind of dancing between worlds where I can't quite put my finger to say it's not for me yet.
Yeah.
And then once the emotional content hits, you're hooked on an emotional level. And psychedelics do on their fundamental level. It's working with you in a private way, in the privacy of your own heart. No one knows really what that experience is you're happening. And the doorway is your own vulnerability to say, I'm just going to be open. I'm going to crack it open a bit and just say, yes, I'll feel deeper and deeper and deeper. And so sanitizing it, I understand the intention behind that. And I also recognize that at the end of the day, for everyone who's doing this kind of work, for whatever reason they came in there, even if they think it's because they want to like be a better CEO or something, it's really because they want to feel like something better in their heart. They know that it could be better and they might not be able to language that or even understand that cognitively, but it's sort of like there is a fundamental core anchor for all of us for even trying psychedelics on any level.
100% agreed. That's exactly right. You know, I don't have much to add to that, but I completely agree that everyone's coming in for a reason, and usually that reason is ineffable. You know, and my personal experience, it's like it wasn't actually on a psychedelic; it was through a meditation. But and I'll describe the meditation because I think it's instructive. It's a meditation where you kind of visit a haunted house. You go and you re-experience a moment of trauma from your past. And just as that moment of trauma, say it was, you know, a parent hitting you across the face because you did something wrong. Just in that moment, what happens is someone pulls you out. A friend pulls you out of that moment and kind of gives you the boxing coach pep talk about like, you know, get yourself together, get back in there and don't let it happen kind of thing. I'm paraphrasing it, you know, very grossly right now, but that's kind of thing. It's like, you can do this. You're an adult now. You don't have to accept that trauma. And then they push you back in and the moment of trauma happens. And if it's a parent hitting you, instead of being hit, you put your hand up and saying like, no, I am not going to accept this. And by virtue of breaking that cycle, you actually break the cycle. For me, I mean, all of that logically makes sense, right? To some people that's a little too far out there, but for a lot of people being like, yeah, I could see how that could start to break, you know, some patterns and habits in your thinking if you go through that exercise. For me, what was powerful about that is the moment in that meditation, and I felt this, you know, viscerally, that someone pulled me out. It was like one of the first times I'd ever felt, and that's the important word, I ever felt like someone actually was looking out for me, right? Like I could tell you that, oh, my mom is looking out for me. Oh, my friends are looking out for me. Oh, they got my back. I could tell you that from up here, but to actually feel it,
it's a big
was
deal.
Such a transformative experience. So different than anything I had experienced in my life. And, you know, to this day, I still talk about it. It still like brings tears to my eyes because it was that powerful of a moment. And that's what we're talking about here, right? Like you can't, another analogy is like, I remember I used to work at a pharmaceutical company as a lawyer and it was all women I worked with and all of them had young kids. And all I heard was them complaining about their kids, you know, and taking them and driving them and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, you guys make having kids sound awful. And they're like, oh no, but it's wonderful. When you see your kids skate for the first time, it's all worthwhile. And like, again, logically, I'm like, no, the math on that one does not stack up. There's just no way. But once you have a kid, you're like, okay, I get it. Right. Like it's that separation between the logic and the emotion, and everyone, when you get into the emotion, it's just so much more powerful.
Yes. And it's sort of like, why else are we here? And so, you know, and the psychedelic medicine, that's why, you know, I think people are interested in it just being available for people as best we can, as sort of decriminalization model or above all, though, I feel like what makes the most sense and what sort of my modus operandi has been providing tools, because I'm like, well, a lot of people are going to have these experiences, what, no matter what, legal or not legal. Yeah. And many people have, and they're going to continue. Many people are seeking. So I was very interested in figuring out ways to give people ways to have positive experiences and ways to have what I consider safe, meaning not traumatic, that's damaging to them in a negative way. That's overwhelmingly positive. And in our culture, particularly with mushrooms, like, we don't have, and they didn't come with them into our culture with this kind of tradition like ayahuasca does or something, or even the container of that very specific intense ceremony that you see, whether it's Daime or a traditional like Amazonian Peruvian style. And so, I don't know, you know, when I would work with people, I'd say 99%, no one had not like sat, quote unquote, in ceremony and just given space to mushrooms and just. And anytime they do that, and we add in the element of some very basic structure, or what I'm calling ritual around it, and the music, they're just like, holy shit, I had no idea. Like, I've had some really great experiences and really life-changing, but this was like, oh my God, like the internal depths that I accessed are profound for people. And that feels like what was being called for after many years of this was almost like a new shamanic American tradition or Western shamanic tradition. And I see that being something that is extremely modern, that isn't, you know, couched or lost in, like you're saying, all these things that people are like, oh, here we go again. You know, now they're like, just like, raise your vibration. You know, it's like, no. It's just something that it's for all of us. You know, and it's extremely simple, perhaps. And maybe it's nothing that different than we've been doing, but it's just sort of like naming it and owning it and devising it, that what works for us, you know, what works for the bastard children of America who are like, I don't know my ancestors. I don't know where I came from. Like, I grew up with everything and like, you know, but I'm so lost. And how do I find my way? And Terence McKenna called the psychedelics a kind of accelerator, like it's sort of a faster track to, like you said, 10 years of therapy. And I think we need some accelerants right now if we are going to make it through as a people, because what's needed on an individual level is lots of little bits of change, those little change bricks in our lives that will hopefully start to fan out into us really collectively saying, I think we can take these next steps and leaps that we have to do.
100%. I do think we need all of those little bricks. And then again, like talking about putting this in a modern medical, Western sanitized way, even doing that, I think is going to give people one or two little bricks and all of it adds together until we have a house. And to your point, you know, about creating a sort of modern Western American like spiritual shamanic process. I think that's awesome. You know, I think the truth is that there should be any number of different ways. You know, if I want to go into a hospital with white walls and fluorescent lights, because that's how I jam, awesome, do it that way. And if you want to go into like a Lakota sweat house, do it that way too. And there should be enough space and scope for everybody to operate in a way that works for them. Provided, I think, in every case, you need to be pushed a little bit, right? Like the whole idea is that you're opening, right? And if it's too easy, if it's too understood, there's going to be no growth there. So, you know, even if like the music where you move from, you know, electronic music that most people would be familiar with or resonate with and then bring in some, you know, traditional music, it's like, even if that just happens on occasion, you're going to start moving them a little by little. But I think everybody has to do that on their kind of own path, their own times, and in ways that works for them. I think that's that's where it kind of lands. The real challenge in my mind is, where's the balance between safety and sanitization, right? Because there are going to be some questionable shamans and guides or therapists out there, maybe just a few of them, but who knows? And so is one terrible experience worth 10 great experiences or 1,000 great experiences or affordable experiences? You know, that's really, I think, the question that it ultimately boils down to is, how do you keep people safe? Maybe we don't even need to keep people safe. Maybe that's too paternalistic. You know, I don't know.
You're not in control. I'll tell you that right now. It's like, that's the thing about leading anything psychedelic therapy, is that is the reason it's so challenging, is the illusion of control goes right out the window. It's like, you're a guide. You're kind of steering the ship. You don't control those storms. You know, what comes is what comes. But having the right skill set, sure. And even in the psychedelic wild west of the underground scene, there's plenty of charlatans and people making horrible mistakes and duplicitous motives. And so, unfortunately, that's part of our human experience and comes with the territory. And people need to have a great deal of discernment about the integrity of the people they're working with. And right now, that's pretty much just word of mouth and talking to people. And that's how it's been. And that hasn't always gone well. But the vast majority of people have their hearts in a really wonderful place.
Yeah. I mean, it's an issue we're dealing with right now, to be quite honest. It's like, I forget the expression, but like, one person's gold is another person something else. But like, right now, we have a meditation that we're thinking about including in the Trip app. And to me, it's a deeply powerful meditation. You know, it goes really deep. To other people, you know, they think it sounds creepy. You know, the voice and the tenor and the tone of it, like, gives them the willies. And it's like, okay, well, what's the right answer? Is like, me having one super powerful experience, or you having one super power experience because you are okay with this resonance, worth like 10 people being creeped out? I don't know, right? Like,
yes, there's many flavors of ice cream, and you don't have to like all of them. Like, I think your experience is better if it pushes different edges and people find what works for them. I mean, you don't want to sanitize it to the point where you find something that works for 99% of people, but it's like, it only works 5% as well. As like, you know, you got to piss some people off if you want to make some good art. And you guys are making art at the end of the day. It's, you know, I mean,
sure.
Yes, it's a business, but you're working with music and creative. It's a lot of creative in this.
Yeah.
And all of that is throwing things into the wind, again, having into a psychedelic experience that you're not controlling. You're just sort of like casting a spell to say, we're here to guide and we're here to help and we're here to make this like set and setting. But beyond that, you know, so that is risk. And so I think if you really lean into that, it can take the pressure off to say, like, it's okay. It's okay to try things, you know, and see what's working for people. We're in such a quantitized world where it's easy to be like, you know, 86.2% of people thumbed down this. It's like, well, is it that black and white? You know, I mean.
Yeah. And what about the 17.8% who thumbed up it, right?
Who loved it. Yeah.
Exactly.
The weirdos need it. Yeah.
It's no such thing as a weird person. Some people just require more understanding, right? But yeah, you know, these are all the things we're working through and asking questions about, and you know, we don't have the answers. Making up
one
as we
thing.
Go.
One thing I found that I was doing some ketamine sessions with my partner, so I was on the other side of it. And she uses a lot of East Forest music, and it was kind of fun because I got to beta test like things I was working on. But one night she said, you know, I said, just do what you want. I don't want to be involved with the music. And she started playing sort of a playlist of some different things. And for myself as a musician, when I was in that space, and I was really deep in it, I felt like super aware. Like every time the song shifted to a new artist, all I could sense was like this new being. Like, oh, I feel the voice and I hear like this new person, not good or bad, but it was a dramatic shift. Like every time it shifted artist, because I was very used to testing out my own material. But that's one artist. And I suddenly realized the advantage of having one voice carry you through the experience. Now that voice is creating different types of music and experience, but I realized then most people, maybe almost all, if they've had an intentional playlist, is built up of different artists. And it's like, they probably haven't experienced the alternative where it's a connected experience. Like, this is one artist's statement. This is Rocky Road Ice Cream. This is my creation. Take that journey. And then the next time, maybe you try a different one or not, but it's now it's a different voice. And it's sort of artistic. And there's a beauty to, like, the human experience being guided by, like, this is one guide in a way, versus like, oh, we have 10 guides. Not that 10 guides is bad, but it's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And it's musically, it's something interesting that I discovered. I kind of wanted to share with you. And I was like, it's something, because I've been playing with your app, and I noticed when I hit go on a journey, I believe you have like a chunk, you have various music selections, right? But they're all around, it seemed like there wasn't one that's going to be the whole thing. Like, it will shift after 30 minutes to a second one or a third one, right?
Yep. Yeah, that was, that was just an artifact of where we were when we started to build the app and trying to do it on a shoestring budget and what music we could afford and bring in. But that will be changing with time. And that's, I appreciate your thoughts on a single artist, because I know in one of my experiences that come to mind, it's like when the music shifted, it felt like getting pushed, like punched almost.
It's a big shift. It's a big huge shift. Transition. And so how that transitions is really tender.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly the right word. And so I'd be very interested to experiencing the other way, because most people haven't written 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 hour soundscapes.
Almost no one.
Tracks. Support that. I think that's, I remember once a long time ago, I was just listening to a song and I got the sense, it doesn't mean I don't do it, I do it all the time, but I got the sense that, like, psychically, if you hit, fast forward through a song, halfway through a song, like, it's affecting you, right? Like, there's a narrative, there's an art, there's an energy. And when you cut it off, it's like coitus interruptus, right? Like, it just stops. It's like, oh, obviously on psychedelics, that's going to be a much more typically profound experience than when you're just listening to a song, but I became very cognizant of it. And I think it absolutely applies here.
Well, speaking of when you're on psychedelics, have you guys thought about this, the notion of not having to interact with the screen too much? Like, if you wanted to record your voice, it could be voice activated, or it's sort of like there's a pressing go and then you don't really have to interact with the phone after that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's always the kind of gold standard of something that's not really interactive until you need it to be interactive in terms of if you want to document things or anything along those lines. But again, when we started out, we were trying to build something on a minimum viable product kind of basis. And to do something that voice activates makes it a lot more complicated to actually get that going. But no, that absolutely, it's stuff we've considered and would love to build in as we continue to evolve it.
It looks really beautiful, by the way. I mean, I think it's a beautiful app. I like the design and, the vibe, and it's cool.
Thank you. At the end of the day, a lot of people, I think, are shocked or appalled that we would ever propose to have a digital tool support a psychedelic experience. And, we've never meant to suggest that this is a replacement from a well-qualified therapist or shaman or guide or anything along those lines. It was to your point that you made a while ago. A lot of people are going to be doing this on their own and have no guidance, no structure, no thoughtfulness. If an app can provide a little piece of that, even as distasteful as it may be to the overall picture of things, that's still better than nothing. And so that's kind of how we're going. And now it's getting better as we start to add more music and more meditation and more tools to support the experience. I think we can really be a wonderful adjunctive tool to a tremendous psychedelic journey.
So what are the plans moving forward? Because I know there's a lot of expansion in the brick and mortar space. Where do you see this going? What are your hopes with that?
That's a good question. So right now I see there's two kind of parallel paths happening, at least in the legal psychedelic industry. And when I say legal, I mean not underground. You have the purely medical approach with FDA approval, psilocybin, clinical trials. That's coming along. And then you have what's happening in Oregon in terms of legalization, as well as all the decriminalization. And inevitably, these are going to, I think, intersect at some point. You can't I don't think you can overly medicalize psychedelics without creating some cultural implications that will move towards a more, I guess, conventional or traditional psychedelic community or experience or attitude. So I kind of see them converging, and we really want to help advance that, but not just in psychedelics, in terms of how we think about medicine and healthcare and things that go beyond spirituality as well, which is, you know, as I mentioned before, I love the idea of psychedelics potentially turning how we think about mental health on its head. That's something we do proactively as opposed to reactively. I also love the idea of it potentially turning healthcare on its head, where, you know, a person's emotions or spirituality is actually the prime focus of medicine, and then everything else is secondary. So instead of going to a GP, you go to, you know, your psychedelic therapist or whatever term you want to insert in there as one of your primary points of contact, because truthfully, compared to a family doctor, they're going to know you a lot more intimately and personally. And then if they can bring that scientific rigor to the conversation where you're blending the emotional and the spiritual with the scientific, that's what's going to lead to the best healthcare outcomes, probably the best spirituality outcomes. You know, I work with a gentleman named Erwin Perlman, and he talks about how true intelligence is the intersection of logic and reason and emotion, right? You can't let your emotions override objective data. By the same token, you can't let objective data override your emotions, and you need to find a way to integrate those two things deeply. And so I see that becoming the future of the psychedelic movement, something that's deeply ingrained in society, something that has a real impact on healthcare, not just mental health care or spirituality. And so with Field Trip, again, starting from the lens or perspective, is the way this starts is still in a medicalized context. So we're going to continue to roll out Field Trip health locations and focus on treating depression and anxiety and PTSD and all of these other DSM indications. But with a stated goal of being able to open this up and provide, admittedly, a more medicalized way for spirituality and growth. Now, that's not for everybody, and it's not necessarily appropriate for everybody. But again, you know, that's going to reach a lot of people who probably wouldn't participate in this system at all in an overly woo-woo kind of context. We like to try and target about one woo as opposed to two woos in terms of like our experience, sort of make it approachable.
And across these different centers and clinics, at least with ketamine right now as it stands, are the costs pretty much the same everywhere, or do they vary per market? Like, what are they looking at if people want to try this?
Yeah, no, it's same cost across all centers right now. Typical treatment program, like the highest level program, is our Core Plus, which has been designed for people suffering with severe PTSD. And that's about $6,000. And then it goes down to, we're just in the process of launching group for our basic treatment program, which is targeted towards depression and anxiety. And that's about $4,000 to $4,500. And that's in both cases for individual treatments. We're just in the midst of launching our group therapy programs. And so all of those costs will roughly be cut in half.
How many sessions is that when you're doing?
Oh yeah. So a typical package, you know, our core program would involve a total of a minimum of 4 ketamine sessions, each of which is followed by what we call exploratory therapy. So a very light touch form of therapy, really for an opportunity for the person to express what came up, share any feelings, thoughts, emotions, visions, anything in the experience, not really intended to go really into the cognitive behavioral therapy. And then interspersed between each 2 ketamine exploratory sessions is an integration session. So that's when we get into more conventional cognitive behavioral therapy, trying to take advantage of that period of neuroplasticity. You know, following a psychedelic experience, as the evidence shows, people are actually, not only are neural synapses being formed, but people are more open to change and really adopting new habits, new mindsets, new outlooks. So taking the awareness that comes here and turning it into action. So not only are you doing the emotional processing that comes along with the psychedelic therapy, you're actually making the lifestyle and attitudinal changes that will support enhanced mental health.
Totally. Forward. Well, I applaud you for it. That you guys are just going for it. And, but you're just like shops in Canada who are just selling the mushrooms and just saying the hell with it. No, but I mean, I know it's on a much bigger scale and you're doing it by the book. And It's great, I think, to look under the hood a bit because, you know, there is so much going on these days that a lot of people do have a lot of questions about just the transparency. Like, who is this player and what are they doing, especially when they're doing it pretty aggressively as far as expansion. And so for myself, it's good to learn a bit. And I'm sure other people, too, will appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity. You know, at the end of the day, I try to be as real as I can, which is I think we're doing it with good intentions. I think we're trying to do this in a way that's thoughtful and as well articulated as it can be right now. And I'll also be the first to admit that there's a lot of stuff we don't know, but we will learn and you're just going to have more opportunity to learn with scale. So it's been fun. It's been wonderful. I've met amazing people. We're, you know, the feedback from the people who have come through our field trip health centers has just been wonderful. So I think we're creating a real impact and trying to create a platform for even more impact.
So the app is, you can just download it, right? That's what I did. And I just started using it. And so how can people interact? And then you also have the brick and mortar and you've got some online stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the brick and mortar is really for people who are dealing with diagnosed mental health conditions. It's much more medical. And if you want more information about that, that's fieldtriphealth.com. We're currently in Toronto, New York, LA, Chicago, and Atlanta, Houston, and the Netherlands, where we'll actually be working with psilocybin truffles that are opening in the coming weeks and then continuing from there. For people who are more self-guided, that's what Trip is for. So if you're interested in Trip, the app is, or the website is tripapp.co, where you can get the links to download it. Because surprisingly, there's a lot of apps on the App Store that have the word Trip in it. Go figure. And then if you're interested in listening to our podcast, it's fieldtripping.fm is the website, or fieldtripping is just the podcast. And those are the best place to find out anything you want to know, or anybody, feel free to reach out to me. I'm on socials, on Twitter and Instagram, at Ronan D as in David Levy.
L-E-V-Y. Cool.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for sharing the time. I've enjoyed it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me and looking forward to continuing the conversation, and hopefully we'll find some cool ways to work together.
Thank you, Ronan, for taking the time to come on the show. I certainly appreciated it, and I just love like diving into these conversations around this burgeoning movement and all the different companies and people and ideas that are circling around it. I think it's important that we just keep talking, and I'm looking forward to seeing how we can collaborate together and how I can bring the East Forest over to Field Trip and see how that could maybe help people in their journeys. So this music you're hearing in the background is Undying. This is a new track off the Possible album, which is releasing every few weeks a new track. It will culminate in a full studio LP of 11 tracks in mid-July. And for now, you got to enjoy this one. It comes out on Wednesday, so you're getting it a little bit early here, a little preview. And I love it. I love the string section, and I love what we were able to do here. It felt like kind of a new avenue for myself, and I'm really proud of it. So thank you for sharing the work and for checking it out wherever you listen to music. You can pre-order the whole Possible album on vinyl. We made a small run, and if you want to put in a pre-order now, it will ship in July. You can check that out in the store over at eastforest.org. Well, hey, thanks for listening, guys, and so much going on out there, so just keep your head on straight. And thanks again to our East Forest Council members on Patreon for your support. And thank you all for listening. You keep walking your walk. Don't take any shit. But if you do, do it with grace.